Wisconsin's air quality is improving. We're talking about the Air Quality Trends Report here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin's current air conditions are in the moderate range statewide, with the exception of our northernmost counties in the Milwaukee and Kenosha shoreline, which is in the good range. The AQI, the Air Quality Index, measures air quality by placing it on a scale of 0 to 500. The new report said ground-level ozone pollution has fallen along the Lake Michigan shoreline since tracking started in 2001. What do you think of federal air quality standards? Should the EPA enforce more stringent or looser regulations on air pollutants? What is air quality like where you are? We're at 800-642-1234. Katie Pradel is Air Program Monitoring Section Chief for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Katie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So what are the main pollutants that can dirty up our air? What are we talking about?
Well, the Wisconsin DNR monitors for ambient concentrations of several air pollutants throughout the state, including ground-level ozone, particle pollution, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, and carbon monoxide. And these make up the criteria pollutants and are very strictly regulated by the United States, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. So that's what this report focuses on. However, there are other different subsets of these criteria pollutants that we also monitor for. But this report, in essence, just focuses on those because they're the most protective and most defined as far as standards go.
You know, it seems so much easier these days with smartphones to be able to check the weather and check the air quality at the same time on our phones and know exactly what air quality is like as you head out the door. Do you think that we are able now to be more in touch with what is going on with our air because of these tools like the AQI?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that, and we're kind of leading with that. We recognized that early on that, and rightly so, weather apps were grabbing air quality from the AQI and sometimes misinterpreting it a little bit. So the DNR created our own app. It's, if anybody can search it on Google Play or the iOS operating system, it's called Wisconsin AQM, and people can download the app, and it's a map of Wisconsin that probably you mentioned at the kind of the top of this.
That's where I found it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it shows the current air quality, and it shows if you zoom in, it shows exactly where all of our air monitoring locations are located. So, and we have quite a few, we have about 40 throughout the state. So you can get a lot of information just from that app about your local air quality. And then like you said, I think it's one of the more positive things we've seen in the past, even just 5 years, is that with the, with everything going on with wildfires, people are seeing impacts from that, from the West Coast. Even this summer, we saw some impacts of smoke in our state. That was why we were seeing those beautiful sunsets. People are really, really interested in their air quality, and they're even deploying air quality sensors in their backyard. So we think it's a really cool time to be in air quality and to be able to work with the public more. And it's kind of, you know, people are always, water is top of mind, and water quality, and rightly so, for their drinking water. But air is as important in that you breathe it every day, and you can only live a few minutes without air.
Katie Pradel is with us, Air Monitoring Section Chief for the DNR. We're discussing the recent DNR Air Quality Trends Report. You can join in. How do you feel about air quality trends where you are? What questions do you have about the report? What do you want to know? Which air pollutants are you most concerned about or that you're curious about? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Katie, the report found 95%, the vast number of Wisconsinites live in an area that meets federal air standards. What do you see through the trend lines?
This has been a trend for years, and it's due a lot to, so the report dates back to 2001. So we have almost 20 years of data just in this report. But you know, the DNR has a longer history than that, of monitoring these pollutants, where it was just not recorded in the same way. So it's harder to put into this report. But back in the 80s, we've seen this drastic decline, and that's due in large part to federal and state rules, standard regulatory initiatives. So as long as that continues, I think we can continue to see these great stories in air. And if you look at, you know, other parts of even the world, the United States does a really good job of, at a federal level, of regulating these pollutants to be protective of public health. So it's good to be in an area where we're meeting the standards.
How do these pollutants get into our air? The pollutants that you listed at the top here, how do they actually make it into our air?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, each pollutant kind of varies by its source. Mm-hmm. Most directly emitted air pollutants are the result of high temperature combustion. So that would include NO2 or nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide, CO, PM2.5, PM10. So that's particulate matter.
Oh, you're making our chemistry people so excited this morning.
I know. I'm sorry. If I get too in the technical weeds, just pull me out. I tend to do that because I get, yeah, I love the monitoring piece of it. So PM2.5 is a smaller size fraction of a particle. And PM10 is a larger size fraction. PM10 is typically from like crushing and grinding. And you can normally see that in the air. So if you see smoke, or if you see like a fugitive dust being kicked up by a truck or something, that may be PM10, whereas PM2.5 is usually not visible to your naked eye. And the concern about PM2.5 is that it can get deeper into your lungs, and that's why it's the standard is lower for that.
Certainly dangerous for people with asthma, for instance.
Exactly. It can really very much irritate people with asthma and chronic conditions. And then one of our biggest ones that we look into is ozone. And many, you know, I may be dating myself, but the ozone layer, we were always worried about the hole in the ozone layer, yeah, a while back. But so it is present in the Earth's upper atmosphere, but it's also present at ground level. So the upper atmosphere ozone is good. It protects us from harmful UV rays, but the concentrations on the ground level, if they're elevated, they can have adverse impacts on health. So the two primary ones that we look at mostly because of their health effects, and because we do kind of get close to the standard in some cases, are ozone and PM2.5. So those are our two largest networks.
We're discussing the air quality trends in Wisconsin with Katie Pradel, the DNR's air monitoring section chief. Do you live near an air quality monitoring site? Maybe you have one in your backyard. What does this look like? What have the results shown you? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Katie Pradel here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about our state's air quality and the new DNR Air Quality Trends Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The report found that concentrations of most air pollutants that the EPA sets federal standards for have decreased in all regions of the state over decades of monitoring them. Wisconsin is following a nationwide trend. According to the EPA, concentrations of air pollutants have dropped significantly over the past 30 years. Which air pollutants are you most concerned about? What do you want to know about carbon emissions and their impact? Be part of this 800-642-1234. Katie Pradel is the DNR's Air Program Monitoring Section Chief, and she's our guide. Katie, take us to the Lake Michigan shoreline. What trends are you seeing there?
We're seeing a reduction for sure. I recall the report illustrated a 25% reduction since 2001, which is consistent with most of our monitoring sites. We still have a little bit of a ways to go in reducing concentrations in that area. And that is definitely one of our primary goals as an entire air program. So, and I can explain if you're interested a little bit.
What's causing it?
So the ozone precursors, this would be oxides of nitrogen and volatile organic compounds. So ozone is secondarily formed. It's not just emitted. So NOx and VOCs that affect Wisconsin oftentimes originate from other states, particularly to the south. So Wisconsin counties along Lake Michigan experience the highest ozone concentrations on days with southerly winds, which transport precursors north to Wisconsin. So the precursors, the best way I can describe it is that they are drawn out over the lake. And if you've ever been on a boat on a hot, sunny day, it's for some reason, no matter how much sunscreen you put on, you burn. And it's because probably the reflection of the water. Mm-hmm. So it kind of amplifies this chemical reaction over the lake between NOx, VOCs, and sunlight, which is like kind of just cooking out over the lake. And then they form high concentrations of ozone, and that's normally okay out on the lake. And then when the land has warmed sufficiently, temperature gradients from the shoreline of the lake can create like a pressure differences, like micro differences. And that causes the lake breeze that many of us enjoy along the lakeshore. And with that, along with the southerly winds bringing these precursors up the lake from larger cities to the south of us that I may not name directly.
Well, these precursors, they know no state boundaries. Let's just start.
Right. Yes, exactly. So in combination with that lake breeze, they push the ozone that's been forming over the lake all day onshore, causing the ozone concentrations in Wisconsin to be closely correlated with the distance from the shoreline. So, for example, we have two monitoring sites in Sheboygan County, and Sheboygan kind of juts out a little bit into the lake, and unfortunately, just that's how the geography works. So one is like directly on the shoreline, like almost on the beach at Coeur d'Andre, and then the other is 3 miles inland. The inland monitor on those lake breeze days can record concentrations of like 10 ppb less than the shoreline monitor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's really a steep gradient, which is the good news, but it also, we've been working with other states in our region and like kind of through the federal tools and rules that we have at our disposal to try to mitigate that. And we do a lot of really cool science monitoring things that help understand exactly where those precursors are coming from.
We have Katie Pradel with us, who is the Air Program Monitoring Section Chief at the DNR. We're discussing the 2020 Air Quality Trends Report and our air quality here in Wisconsin. With your questions, 800-642-1234. Let's go to the phones now. John is joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, John. What is your air quality situation?
Hey, good morning. Well, I have a question on Eau Claire is kind of surrounded by these open pit sand mines, you know, to the south, to the west, and especially to the north up by New Auburn. There's some big ones. you know, they were created in a big rush with the fracking industry, and they seemed like they couldn't open them and put them up fast enough, and now they're all pretty much sitting idle. But, you know, they all seem to have these large piles of sand. And I remember one time when I was up by New Auburn a couple of years ago getting gas, the local gas station said that they had to sweep the floors every day because the sand would come in when the doors were opened or under the cracks of the doors. And I'm just kind of wondering, with these open pit sand mines and huge piles of sand laying around, the wind has to certainly move that stuff and get it in the air. Isn't that like a safety issue, breathing in those fine particles of silicone? And how does that affect our health? Should we be concerned about that?
John, thank you. Katie?
Yeah, that's a great question, and one that we actually get a lot. The sand mines we monitor really closely. We do have PM10 monitoring at many of those sand mines that the DNR monitoring group works directly with the facility to implement that. We help them set it up, and we audit those sites to ensure that they're reading correctly. We've been doing that for, I don't have it right in front of me, but I think about 10 years, and we've only seen two exceedances they didn't raise to the level of exceeding the PM10 standard. And while I do understand that is a nuisance, it would be a nuisance dust, there, many of the sand mines have fugitive dust plans. So we also have compliance inspectors that go to those sites, and they do inspections, like visual, along with full compliance inspections. So we do what we have authority to do, but when that happens specifically, we're happy to hear from you, and feel free to, you know, send a message, because I can understand that can be concerning and frustrating. But how the like kind of how I described the particle size fractions earlier, the smaller fractions that you actually don't see are what EPA it has prioritized as being more concerning for public health.
What are the fugitive dust plans?
This isn't my exact area of expertise, but I'll try, and because I work with it pretty closely, because we work with the sand mines. But the each sand mine, as part of their permit, needs to submit a fugitive dust plan. So as part of their air permit, mm-hmm. needs to submit a fugitive dust plan, where they make a plan to control all dust that may be blowing off of the piles or coming off the conveyor belts and things like that. I think what I know most about is, like, for example, like a coal plant may have to wet down their giant coal pile for a certain amount of time throughout the day in order to mitigate dust blowing off of those piles.
I wonder if there are effective control measures, because a sand pit's a sand pit. It's open. I mean, how can you control it?
Right. That's the concern. But they do go through full compliance mm-hmm. inspections. Actually, those sources are, they go through extenuous compliance inspections. But if we could take this person's name, I can follow up with, like,
sure,
more comprehensive.
Absolutely. Yeah, John and Eau Claire, make sure you hang on so you can talk with Steve, the producer. Let's go to Joyce now from La Crosse. Hi, Joyce.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is the following. I'm just looking at this on my morning weather, and I see a gradient from green to magenta, and I see a number, 59, moderate, or 3 and good. And I'm just wondering what the scale is reading.
Now, that's a great question. How do you read the AQI, the air quality index?
Let me just pull it up. So I'm a visual person, so just so I'm seeing it too. So you see the scale. These these are all, the EPA created the AQI as a way to easily understand the air quality standards. So these take into account most of the time, they just take into account ozone and PM2.5, and they incorporated it and tried to find an easy way to display the standard. So the the moderate is typically below the standard still. Mm-hmm. And then orange is when you kind of get into the it's higher than a typical standard. So if that makes sense, but the standards are set up to be, the standards are designed based on a lot of scientific data. So a standard, if it's an exceedance, isn't necessarily known in the moment. So
we need to pause here with Katie Pradel, Section Chief of the Wisconsin DNR Air Program Monitoring. We will be back. We will pick this up right after the news update on the Ideas Network. Wisconsin's air quality is improving. We're discussing long-term air quality trends here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Air quality matters in the pandemic. Breathing in dirty air is linked to a higher risk of dying from COVID. A Harvard researcher found a small rise in a person's long-term exposure to air pollution was associated with an 11% increase in deaths from COVID. What is the air quality like where you are? Does it change based on conditions? What do you want lawmakers to do to address air pollutants and the changing climate? It's 800-642-1234. Katie Pradel is Air Monitoring Section Chief for the DNR, and she's explaining the latest air quality trends released by the DNR. Katie, we were landing there on AQI, the Air Quality Index, and I was talking recently to someone in Los Angeles who says they don't leave their door, they don't leave home without first looking at their AQI because it may look really gorgeous outside and the air may be really bad. Explain for us what that AQI is doing for us.
Thanks. Yeah, it's trying to be a service or a tool for the public, just as you described, for them to determine, especially for folks that have asthma or respiratory illness. Some people have really struggled with being in areas where the air quality is at a moderate or higher. So just as you described, especially during the wildfires, I heard that a lot, that from folks on the West Coast, that they were even putting their, like a homemade filtration type device where they could use fans and filters and filter the air inside their homes that was coming in from the outside. So it was a really useful tool. And I think EPA has even expanded on that tool to include air quality sensors for exactly that reason. So where the regulatory monitors are really expensive, so the requirements are that they are protective of public health and they're really spatially distributed. But there are air quality sensors set up in between that can fill in the gaps. So the EPA and states have worked together, and we've come a long way to try to make the sensor data be more reliable and more comparable to the regulatory monitors. Mm-hmm. So that's had allowed improvements in air now, where they can actually track smoke plumes and make it more micro scale to where people live. So it's as interest is rising from the public, so are the tools. So it's all, that's good news too.
Yeah, and certainly your geography plays into the role of how your air is as well. When I was in Mexico City early this year, that's in a valley, and so all of that air gets trapped there and you have really bad air quality.
Right. Yes, absolutely. I mean, and even in Wisconsin, like I had described earlier, the lakeshore, when the air is fine, probably 10 miles inland, it can be in the orange or red for the lakeshore region. And that also, it happens sometimes in Wisconsin with PM 2.5 is in the winter, we see some inversions where it's just that, where the air gets trapped and just kind of stays there, so we can have some moderates for an extended period of time in the winter too.
Let's bring in Jesse now from Ferryville with a question. Hi, Jesse.
Good morning. Yeah, thank you so much. First of all, Katie, for your excellent work on this, and so glad this topic is being put out there, and you know, for all of our protection and our kids and grandkids too. And that's kind of my question, I guess, is for my kid who's 4 years old and unfortunately has some asthma, with this air quality index. I really appreciate that being provided, and the work that you do there. But are there certain, you mentioned a lot of different chemicals and types of particulate and things. At the risk of painting in medically broad strokes, of course, are there certain things we should pay attention to as people who, you know, have asthma or are caring for people with asthma related to the air quality index?
Jesse, yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question, and thanks for the compliment. It's always good to hear from people that use it and have a really, really important purpose to use this information. So as far as my advice to you for your child that has asthma, I would say that checking I would download that app on your phone. So just search Wisconsin AQM, and then, also, we put out forecasts on our website that would tell you a projection of when you may see some moderate air quality in the upcoming days, so that instead of just having to be glued to your phone and checking it every day before you go outside, you can kind of get an idea for the next 3 days of when we might have elevated air quality. But as a rule of thumb, for ozone, if you live along the lakeshore, it's typically on days when we're going to see an extended, so beautiful days over the course of a few days with southerly winds. That's when we see higher ozone. PM 2.5 is a little bit less predictable from just being able to look outside. So looking at our forecast would be a really great tool for you. And I would just limit outside time is fine, but maybe just keep the exercise at a low impact exercise during that time if it's at a moderate.
We're talking with Katie Pradel, who is the Air Program Monitoring Section Chief with the Wisconsin DNR, looking at trends in air quality in Wisconsin, taking your questions at 800-642-1234. Katie, the Trump administration in recent years has reversed or dismantled dozens of rules on air pollution and emission, the bulk of them carried out by the EPA, you know, weakening limits on carbon dioxide emissions from power plants and from vehicles. Will we see a dramatic increase in greenhouse gas emissions over the next decade?
That's hard to say. I would say there are things that are still in place that will help us understand the greenhouse gas impacts, which we're still kind of at the learning level there. Especially in our state, I think we, like, generally nationwide, we know what the issue is, but there are still things that we can do. For example, most of the CO2 is emitted by cars, power plants, industrial facilities. So even all those sources are getting cleaner, and there's still sources of SO2, which is a criteria pollutant that we do control and regulate. The challenge lies in that, unlike pollutants like NO2, VOCs, PM, SO2, it's really hard to control or, like, scrub CO2 where it's emitted. So emissions go down only when combustion sources are replaced with less emitting sources. So that's kind of a roundabout way of saying we do need federal regulations, and we always have, to kind of help us control these, any type of air pollutant.
Let's bring in Gary now in Iron River with a question. Hi, Gary.
Hi, good morning, ladies. Say, we have lots of regulations about big industry pollution and inspection and enforcement. I'm curious what the rules are and who's responsible for enforcing more individual behaviors, particularly in rural areas. You have lots of people that burn garbage, burn styrofoam peanuts. You have these large outdoor wood furnaces that I know have requirements when they're sold and designed, but they fill them full of hundreds of pounds of cold, wet wood, and they sit and smolder. And you have homemade and purchased used motor oil, drain oil furnaces that people have, and it seems like there's no inspection enforcement over those kinds of things. Who's responsible for that and the rules?
Yeah, Gary brings up a lot of examples there, Katie.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's always a point of frustration, I think, for people, for the folks in rural areas. And, you know, it's always difficult to have a neighbor that is doing things that are outside the scope of what is allowable. So I think there are groups that try to control that. There are open burning laws. I'm not sure that I would know the direct answer to that, so I may have to follow up on that.
So, but open burning in general, not good for air quality if you're burning your garbage.
Right. Yes, exactly. That. That would be a municipality
sure.
law, or who they would have to contact.
What are some more specific things, though, that you can do on the individual level that would have a positive impact on air quality?
Well, as far as burning goes, as I think it was Gary mentioned, burning clean. If that's how you heat your home, clean, dry, aged wood is kind of what is allowable, and that is the best course of action. But I think what people can do just outside of, you know, burning rules is, like, for example, when I cut my grass during the coolest time of the day, because your lawnmower is a combustion source, and that can lead to increases in ozone. And I fill my gas tank at coolest times of the day when those VOCs can't react with sunlight and form ozone. So we can all move towards vehicles that are less impactful, electric. If that's not possible, maybe consider alternative methods to get places, like I was going to say get to work, but we're not all doing that now. So.
Well, let's pause there. Katie Pradel is section chief of the DNR's air monitoring program, and we will be back with her in just a minute. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation now with Katie Pradel from the DNR. The DNR's 2020 Air Quality Trends Report is out. 95% of Wisconsinites live in areas meeting all federal air quality standards. And air quality is improving in our state based on long-term monitoring trends. Let's bring in Steve now, who's joining us from Hartford. Hi, Steve. What's your question?
Hi, I'm in a bad cell area, so I hope I get through all the way.
No, we hear you loud and clear.
Good. I had a quick question. You know, we've been burning cleaner gasoline, the ethanol additions, and so forth for decades now. But there's always that controversy that you hear people say, well, we get less mileage, so we're burning more fuel versus cleaner fuel. Is there evidence to suggest that the gasolines that we're burning now are improving air quality and have improved it over the last, 20, 30 years? I hope I make sense.
Steve, thanks. Katie.
Yep. Yes, that absolutely makes sense. And I feel your pain being a Milwaukee resident and having, you know, kind of gone through all of that myself. And the short answer is yes, we are seeing the drastic improvements, and that has specifically contributed to many of the reductions that we're seeing. So while it does kind of feel like a little bit of a sacrifice in you know, the different mixes that the Milwaukee area gets, I think it's well worth the improvements that we're seeing in air quality. And, you know, we're helping folks with asthma specifically and along the lakeshore in that, like, that's one of the major contributors to the ozone reductions that we're seeing. So yeah, it's been helpful.
Steve, thanks. Let's bring in Charlotte now in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi. Good morning. I just wanted to know, because I was thinking about considering buying an electric car or a battery-operated car. I haven't studied it or anything. Are they really kind to the air?
They are, yes. Yep. So they have pretty much no emissions. And I know there are the arguments that you still have to plug it in, mm-hmm. and that is a power plant that would supply that power. But I think what we're seeing is that many of the power plants that we regulate have gone from coal to cleaner burning natural gas. So it's electric would definitely be a cleaner burning, the cleanest you could get.
Yeah, Katie, I want to ask you about coal plants going offline. Can you see the changes as we start to see fewer coal plants operating?
Yes. I think that is part of, you know, that is one of the pieces of the trends report. And you know, the section on emissions is it speaks directly to that. So many of the reductions that we have seen have been the coal plants changing and switching to cleaner burning fuels, which is a definitely positive trend.
Okay, and then what about the impact on alternative energies like solar and wind as those have started to come online? What is their impact on air quality?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know that we specifically track that, but okay. That would be something to add and to note for future trends reports. What we're also always kind of asking people. So that's part of the reason I came on. If anybody has anything they've read this and would like us to add, just let us know.
Let's bring in Ron now from Manitowoc County. Hi, Ron.
Good morning. Thanks. Going back to burn barrels, I think if you do a search on DNR website, burn barrels, you'll find that the only thing items permitted to be burned are clean paper and clean wood in burn barrels, et cetera. The other item would be also, how about the car ferry that goes between Manitowoc and Ludington, which apparently has no pollution control at all on it and burns coal. Thank you.
Okay, so the car ferry and, you know, Katie, if you could give us some context on that.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I would just, I just want to follow up and ask about the burn barrel. If there's maybe a contact information, perhaps that earlier caller could get that through the website.
Sure, so, sure.
But anyway, the car ferry, that's something that people are looking at on a federal level, and they're looking at ports specifically and how those types of emissions can impact air quality in the port as well as on the water. So that is something like we're kind of just getting into. So, but that's really observant, and that's a good point. So those ferries, they may have controls, but we don't specifically regulate those ferries. But I think that's being investigated on a national level.
We're talking with Katie Pradel, who is the Air Program Monitoring Section Chief with the Wisconsin DNR, looking at air trends over time. And still time for you to talk about your air quality, 800-642-1234. Katie, how does the pandemic in any way affect our air quality improvement work, or how has the pandemic affected your work in this area?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I'm glad you asked it. So we get that question a lot, and with the Safer at Home initiatives, we looked into it as well as EPA, and then we found various results in that we have near road monitoring stations, and of course those saw a reduction in NO2 and CO. We haven't seen a lot of difference in PM2.5 or ozone, which that would make sense because it's formed secondarily. On a national scale, EPA looked at Washington, D.C., L.A., and Chicago, and they found great reductions on the coasts, but they didn't see as much reduction in Chicago, so we're really going to want to look into that further, because that can inform what controls actually look like. Like, and this is a really unique time that we can see what it looks like to have people stay home and not drive, you know, and get the actual monitored data. So we're really, really excited to look into that and hope to have it in next year's trends report. As far as how this has affected our group, our monitoring group is essential because it's a public health service. So we've been in the field the whole time. It's been, we have a lot of heroes in the field right now, probably listening to this show. So shout out to the people on the BioWatch route right now. We all listen to this on the route. So I just like wanted to thank my group for that. And then as I think there was like a little bit of a question about maybe the budget. And I think we're funded by sources and a little bit of federal grants. And I think, again, because this is a public health protection, I feel pretty secure amid the pandemic.
Well, we're almost out of time, but I'm just, you know, dying to ask you this question. So which is in better shape in Wisconsin, our air or our water?
Oh, I don't know if I can throw water under the bus. I think they're both in great shape. And last year was the year of clean drinking water. So I think we're both in really, really good shape.
And so diplomatic. Yeah.
Well, air, of course. Just kidding.
Katie, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Katie Pradel is the Air Program Monitoring Section Chief with the Wisconsin DNR. We have a link, by the way, to her report at wpr.org/mornings. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.